He looked around for likely confirmation and pointed to a tall, stoop man of 50 years.
Kill her, Jarrett! Kill her! That was my intent!
It was, my lady, said Sir Jared Frey, one of his sons by his second wife, on my honour.
Is it my fault that your fool brother lost his battle before we could march?
He leaned back against his cushions and scowled at her, as if challenging her to dispute his version of events.
I am told the Kingslayer went through him like an axe through ripe cheese. Why should my boys hurry south to die? All those who didn't go south are running north again.
Catelyn would gladly have spitted the querulous old man and roasted him over a fire, but she had only till evenfall to open the bridge. Calmly she said, "All the more reason that we must reach River Run and soon. Where can we go to talk, my lord?"
"We're talking now,"
Lord Frey complained. The spotted pink head snapped around.
"What are you all looking at?"
he shouted at his kin.
"Get out of here! Lady Stark wants to speak to me in private. Might be she has designs on my fidelity, eh? Go, all of you, find something useful to do. Yes, you too, woman. Out, out, out!"
As his sons and grandsons, and daughters and bastards and nieces and nephews streamed from the hall, he leaned close to Catelyn and confessed.
"They're all waiting for me to die. Stebron's been waiting for 40 years. But I keep disappointing him, eh? Why should I die just so he can be a lord, I ask you? I won't do it."
"I've every hope that you will live to be 100.
"Eh, that would boil them, to be sure. Oh, to be sure. Now what do you want to see?"
"We want to cross," Catelyn told him.
"Oh, do ye? That's blunt. Why should I let you?"
For a moment her anger flared. "If you were strong enough to climb your own battlements, Lord Frey, you would see that my son has 20,000 men outside your walls."
"There'll be 20,000 fresh corpses when Lord Tywin gets here,"
the old man shot back.
"Don't sit there and frighten me, my lady. Your husband's in some traitor's cell under the Red Keep. Your father's sick, might be dying. And Jaime Lannister's got your brother in chains. What do you have that I should fear, eh? That son of yours? I'll match you son for son, and I'll still have 18 when yours are all dead."
"You swore an oath to my father," Catelyn reminded him. He bobbed his head side to side, smiling.
"Oh, yes, I said some words, but I swore oaths to the crown, too, it seems to me. Joffrey's the king now, and that makes you and your boy and all those fools out there no better than rebels. If I had the sense the gods gave a fish, I'd help the Lannisters boil you all."
"Why don't you?" she challenged him. Lord Walder snorted with disdain.
"Clear! Lord Tywin, the proud and splendid warden of the West, hand of the king, oh, what a great man that one is. Him and his gold this, and gold that, and lions here, and lions there. I'll wager you he eats too many beans. He breaks wind just like me, but you'll never hear him admit it. Oh, no. What's he got to be so puffed up about, anyway? Only 2 sons, and one of them's a twisty little monster. I'll match him, son for son, and still have 19 and a half left, when all of us are dead." He cackled. "If Lord Tywin wants my help, he can bloody well ask for it."
That was all Catelyn needed to hear. "I am asking for your help, my lord," she said humbly. "And my father, and my brother, and my lord husband, and my sons are asking with my voice." Lord Walder jabbed a bony finger at her face.
"Save your sweet words, my lady. Sweet words I get from me wife. Did you see her, eh? 16 she is. A little flower. And her honey's only for me. I wager she gives me a son by this time next year. Perhaps I'll make him heir. Wouldn't that boil the rest of them?"
"I'm certain she will give you many sons." His head bobbed up and down.
"Your lord father did not come to the wedding. An insult, as I see it, even if he is dying. He never came to my last wedding either. He calls me the late Lord Frey, you know. Does he think I'm dead? I'm not dead, and I promise you I'll outlive him as I outlived his father. Your family has always pissed on me. Don't deny it. Don't lie. You know it's true. Years ago, I went to your father and suggested a match between his son and my daughter. Why not? I had a daughter in mind, sweet girl, only a few years older than Edmure. But if your brother didn't warm to her, I had others. He might have had young ones, old ones, virgins, widows, whatever he wanted. No, Lord Huster would not hear of it. Sweet words he gave me, excuses. But what I wanted was to get rid of a daughter. And your sister, that one, she's full as bad. A year ago, no, more. John Aaron was still the king's hand, and I went to the city to see my sons ride in the tourney. Stevron and Jared are too old for the list now, but Danwell and Hosteen rode. Perwin as well. And a couple of my bastards tried the melee. If I'd known how they'd shame me, I would never have troubled myself to make the journey. Why'd I need to ride all that way to see Hosteen knocked off his horse by that Tyrell whelp? I ask you, the boy's half his age. Sir Daisy, they call him, something like that. And Danwell was unhorsed by a hedge knight. Some days I wonder if those two are truly mine. My third wife was a Creakle. All of the Creakle women are sluts. Well, never mind about that. She died before you were born. What do you care? I was speaking of your sister. I propose that Lord and Lady Aaron foster two of my grandsons at court and offer to take their own son to ward here at the Twins. Are my grandsons unworthy to be seen at the king's court? They are sweet boys, quiet and mannerly. Walder is Merritt's son, named after me. And the other one, I don't recall. He might have been another Walder. They're always naming them Walder, so I'll favour them. But his father... which one was his father now?
His face wrinkled up.
Well, whoever he was, Lord Aaron wouldn't have him, or the other one. And I blame your lady's sister for that. She frosted up as if I'd suggested selling her boy to a mummer's show, or making a eunuch out of him. And when Lord Aaron said the child was going to Dragonstone to foster with Stannis Baratheon, she stormed off without a word of regrets, and all the hand could give me was apologies. What good are apologies, I ask you?
Catelyn frowned disquieted. I had understood that Lysa's boy was to be fostered with Lord Tywin at Casterly Rock.
No, it was Lord Stannis,
Walder Frey said irritably.
Do you think I can't tell Lord Stannis from Lord Tywin? They're both bungholes who think they're too noble to shit, but never mind about that. I know the difference. Or do you think I'm so old I can't remember? I'm 90, and I remember very well. I remember what to do with a woman, too. That wife of mine will give me a son before this time next year, I'll wager. Or a daughter, and I can't be helped. Boy or girl, It will be red, wrinkled and squalling, and like as not, she'll want to name it Walder or Wilder.
Catelyn was not concerned with what Lady Frey might choose to name her child. John Aaron was going to foster his son with Lord Stannis? You're quite certain of that?
Yes, yes, yes,
the old man said.
Only he died. So what does it matter? Eh? You say you want to cross the river.
We do.
Well, you can't,
Lord Walder announced crisply.
Not unless I allow it, and why should I? The Tullys and the Starks have never been friends of mine.
He pushed himself back in his chair and crossed his arms, smirking, waiting for her answer. The rest was only haggling. A swollen red sun hung low against the western hills when the gates of the castle opened. The drawbridge creaked down, the portcullis winched up, and Lady Catelyn Stark rode forth to rejoin her son and his lord's bannermen. Behind her came Sir Gerard Frey, Sir Huston Frey, Sir Danwell Frey, and Lord Walder's bastard son, Runnel Rivers, leading a long column of pikemen, rank on rank of shuffling men in blue steel ringmail and silvery grey cloaks. Rob galloped out to meet her, with Grey Wynne racing beside his stallion. It's done, she told him. Lord Walder will grant you your crossing. His swords are yours as well. Less 400 he means to keep back to hold the twins. I suggest that you leave 400 of your own, a mixed force of archers and swordsmen. He can scarcely object to an offer to augment his garrison. But make certain you give the command to a man you can trust. Lord Walder may need help keeping faith. As you say, Mother, Rob answered, gazing at the ranks of pikemen. Perhaps Sir Helman Tallheart, do you think? A fine choice. What did he want of us? If you can spare a few of your swords, I need some men to escort two of Lord Frey's grandsons north to Winterfell, she told him. I have agreed to take them as wards. They are young boys, aged 8 years and 7. It would seem they are both named Walder. Your brother Bran will welcome the companionship of lads near his own age, I should think. Is that all? 2 fosterlings? That's a small enough price to... Lord Frey's son, Oliver, will be coming with us, she went on. He is to serve as your personal squire. His father would like to see him knighted in good time. A squire? He shrugged. Fine. That's fine if his... Also, if your sister Arya is returned to us safely... It is agreed that she will marry Lord Walder's youngest son, Elmer, when the two of them come of age. Rob looked nonplussed. Arya won't like that one bit. And you are to wed one of his daughters, once the fighting is done, she finished. His lordship has graciously consented to allow you to choose whichever girl you prefer. He has a number he thinks might be suitable. To his credit, Rob did not flinch. I see. Do you consent? Can I refuse? Not if you wish to cross. I consent, Rob said solemnly. He had never seemed more manly to her than he did at that moment. Boys might play with swords, but it took a lord to make a marriage pact, knowing what it meant. They crossed at evenfall, as a horned moon floated upon the river. The double column wound its way through the gate of the Eastern Twin like a great steel snake, slithering across the courtyard, into the keep and over the bridge, to issue forth once more from the second castle on the west bank. Catelyn rode at the head of the serpent, with her son and her uncle, Sir Brynden and Sir Stevron Bray. Behind followed 9/10 of their horse, knights, lancers, free riders, and mounted bowmen. It took hours for them all to cross. Afterwards Catelyn would remember the clatter of countless hooves on the drawbridge, the sight of Lord Walder Frey in his litter watching them pass, the glitter of eyes peering down through the slats of the murder holes in the ceiling, as they rode through the water tower. The larger part of the northern hosts, pikes and archers and great masses of men-at-arms on foot, remained upon the east bank under the command of Roose Bolton. Rob had commanded him to continue the march south, to confront the huge Lannister army coming north under Lord Tywin. For good or ill, her son had thrown the dice. John.
Are you well, Snow?
Lord Mormont asked, scowling.
Well, his raven squawked. Well.
I am, my lord, John lied, loudly, as if that could make it true. And you? Mormont frowned.
A dead man tried to kill me. How well could I be?
He scratched under his chin. His shaggy grey beard had been singed in the fire, and he'd hacked it off. The pale stubble of his new whiskers made him look old, disreputable, and grumpy.
You do not look well. How's your hand?
Healing. John flexed his bandaged fingers to show him. He had burned himself more badly than he knew, throwing the flaming drapes, and his right hand was swathed in silk halfway to the elbow. At the time he'd felt nothing. The agony had come after. His cracked red skin oozed fluid, and fearsome blood blisters rose between his fingers, big as roaches. The maester says I'll have scars, but otherwise the hand should be as good as it was before.
A scarred hand is nothing. On the wall you'll be wearing gloves, often as not.
As you say, my lord. It was not the thought of scars that troubled John. It was the rest of it. Maester Aemon had given him milk of the poppy, yet even so the pain had been hideous. At first it had felt as if his hand was still aflame, burning day and night. Only plunging it into basins of snow and shaved ice gave any relief at all. John thanked the gods that no one but Ghost saw him writhing on his bed, whimpering from the pain. And when at last he did sleep, he dreamt, and that was even worse. In the dream, the corpse he fought had blue eyes, black hands, and his father's face. But he dared not tell Mormont then.
Dywin and Hake returned last night, the old bear said. They found no sign of your uncle, no more than the others did.
I know. John had dragged himself to the common hall to sup with his friends, and the failure of the ranger's search had been all the men had been talking of.
You know, Mormont grumbled, how is it that everyone knows everything around here?
He did not seem to expect an answer.
It would seem there were only the two of those creatures, whatever they were. I will not call them men, and thank the gods for that. Any more, and... well, that doesn't bear thinking about. There will be more, though. I can feel it in these old bones of mine, and Maester Aemon agrees. The cold winds are rising. Summer is at an end, and a winter is coming such as this world has never seen.
Winter is coming. The stark words had never sounded so grim or ominous to John as they did now.
My lord, he asked hesitantly, it said there was a bird last night.
There was. What of it?
I had hoped for some word of my father.
Father!
Taunted the old raven, bobbing its head as it walked across Mormont's shoulders.
Father!
The Lord Commander reached up to pinch his beak shut, but the raven hopped onto his head, fluttered its wings, and flew across the chamber to light above a window.
Grief and noise, Mormont grumbled. That's all they're good for, ravens. Why I put up with that pestilential bird? If there was news of Lord Eddard, don't you think I would have sent for you? Bastard or no, you're still his blood. The message concerned Sir Barristan Selmy. It seems he's been removed from the King's Guard. They gave his place to that black dog Clegane, and now Selmy's wanted for treason.
The fool sent some watchman to seize him, but he slew two of them and escaped. Mormon snorted. Leaving no doubt of his view of the men who'd sent gold cloaks against a knight as renowned as Barristan the Bold. We have white shadows in the woods, an unquiet dead stalking our halls, and a boy sits on the Iron Throne, he said in disgust. The raven laughed shrilly.
Boy! 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 Boy!
Sir Barristan had been the old bear's best hope, John remembered. If he had fallen, what chance was there that Mormont's letter would be heeded? He curled his hand into a fist. Pain shot through his burned fingers. What of my sisters?
The message made no mention of Lord Eddard or the girls.
He gave an irritated shrug.
Perhaps they never got my letter. Aemon sent two copies, with his best birds, but who can say? More like Pice Hill did not deign to reply. It will not be the first time, nor the last. I fear we count for less than nothing in King's Landing. They tell us what they want us to know, and that's little enough.
And you tell me what you want me to know, and that's less, John thought resentfully. His brother Rob had called the banners and ridden south to war, yet no word of that had been breathed to him, save by Samuel Tarly, who'd read the letter to Maester Aemon and whispered its contents to John that night in secret, all the time saying how he shouldn't. Doubtless they thought his brother's war was none of his concern. It troubled him more than he could say. Rob was marching, and he was not. No matter how often John told himself that his place was here now, with his new brothers on the wall, he still felt craven.
Corn!
The raven was crying.
Corn! Corn!
Oh, be quiet,
the old bear told it.
Snow, how soon does Maester Aemon say you'll have the use of that handbag?
Soon, John replied.
Good.
On the table between them, Lord Mormont laid a large sword in a black metal scabbard banded with silver.
Here, you'll be ready for this, then.
The raven flapped down and landed on the table, strutting towards the sword, head cocked curiously. John hesitated. He had no inkling what this meant.
My lord? The fire melted the silver off the pommel and burnt the crossguard and grip. Well, dry leather and old wood, what can you expect? The blade now. You'll need a fire 100 times as hot to harm the blade.
Mormont shoved the scabbard across the rough oak planks.
I had the rest made anew. Take it.
Take it,
echoed the raven, preening.
Take it. Take it.
Awkwardly, John took the sword in hand. His left hand, his bandaged right, was still too raw and clumsy. Carefully, he pulled it from its scabbard and raised it level with his eyes. The pommel was a hunk of pale stone weighted with lead to balance the long blade. It had been carved into the likeness of a snarling wolf's head, with chips of garnet set into the eyes. The grip was virgin leather, soft and black, as yet unstained by sweat or blood. The blade itself was a good 1/2 foot longer than those John was used to, tapered to thrust as well as slash, with 3 fullers deeply incised in the metal. Where ice was a true two-handed greatsword, this was a hand and a halfer, sometimes named a bastard sword. Yet the wolf sword actually seemed lighter than the blades he had wielded before. When John turned it sideways, he could see the ripples in the dark steel where the metal had been folded back on itself again and again. "This is Valyrian steel, my lord," he said wonderingly. His father had let him handle ice often enough. He knew the look, the feel.
"It is," the old bear told him. "It was my father's sword, and his father's before him. The Mormons have carried it for 5 centuries. I wielded it in my day, and passed on to my son,
when I took the black.
He is giving me his son's sword?
John could scarcely believe it. The blade was exquisitely balanced. The edges glimmered faintly as they kissed the light. Your son?